Dylan rubbed his eyes, damned if this history paper was going to get the better of him. Sure, his subject Ian Anderson had already been studied from every conceivable angle, but Dylan felt he had fresh eyes, or at least he'd thought he had. He hadn't chosen Anderson just because he was a descendant, one of only two in his generation. He and Bex had dubbed themselves the Anderson Club back in elementary school in honor of it. It was an honor, he supposed, given that they were halfway to the star that bore his name. That was probably why the assignment felt so important. Tensions were high among the crew as they neared Hades 352, the last star they could slingshot around to change course back to their original destination, which they'd abandoned in favor of Anderson's star. Dylan viewed his paper as taking a stand for carrying on to Anderson B. Dylan had inherited Ian Anderson's synesthesia too, although differently than Bex, whose fluid senses inspired great music. She'd gotten the better deal, he concluded, as his gift was more cerebral than sensory. If I look too closely, his eyes look backlit. Like there's a lamp somewhere behind them, shining through smoky glass. I don't look too closely anymore. I'm sleeping, I tell him.
No, you're not,
he says. He flashes that glistening fishbone smile laced with strings of saliva.
You didn't sleep all night. Tell me what you were thinking about. Daydreams, plans, memories.
So he's not going to leave me alone. No, I say. He snaps his teeth together the way he does when I say something he doesn't like. I sit up away from him, cross-legged, and run my fingers through my hair. He watches me pull it into a high ponytail. I secure it with the elastic I keep on my wrist.
Oh, please, he says. You have the best memories of anyone I know.
I roll my eyes. I'm the only one you know.
Correction,
he says. He pulls a scab from his shoulder and then examines it.
I know everyone. You're the only one I love.
Look, we figured out how not to get eaten by the dinosaurs, right? Is this so different?
Clearly the education system has failed you, young lady.
The man replied in exasperation. If there is an education system, no one's told me about it. Rain defended herself. I don't mean to be argumentative. I'm just not sure I come to the same conclusion as you do regarding God's plan.
An open mind is all we ask, he replied.
That's fair. Sorry to have interrupted you. She apologized and left them discussing her. They seem nice, she thought. Just a little misguided. A poster taped to a lamppost caught her eye, and she pulled it off to examine it. It announced a concert by Armageddon's Embers, her all-time favorite band, right here in Mecca. There is a god, she yelled, and the robed men glared at her, sure that she was mocking them. Sorry. Beautiful, isn't it? The woman asked, gazing out at the desert. It's an endless sea of misery and death, Thistle countered. And still, somehow beautiful, the woman mused. What do you want? Thistle asked brusquely, hoping to shorten the time she was forced to share the one place she considered hers alone. I'm Cassie, and what I want is you, the woman replied matter-of-factly. Explain, Thistle requested impatiently. I'm from the Wish Foundation, and I want to enlist you in a fight. Thistle bristled for so many reasons. First, she'd had more than enough charity intended solely to assuage the upper caste's guilt for the mistreatment of her people, if they felt any at all. And second, nothing was more condescending than implying that her cancer was a battle that would ultimately be her failing when she lost, as though she hadn't fought hard enough. Not that kind of fight, Cassie told her, as though reading her mind. I want your help in a war against injustice. A fight we'll take all the way to death's door and beyond. To go down fighting. To matter. A noble sentiment, Thistle replied, jaded. But isn't the whole wish thing supposed to be about what I want, not what you want? That is what you want, though, isn't it? Cassie asked back. It is, Thistle had to admit. So, are you in? What's with the sexy librarian trope? Julia asked, well into her third glass of wine. The girls didn't answer while they shifted gears to consider this new random thought their friend had plucked from her scattershot brain. I mean, take Anna, Julia continued. Not a librarian, Anna reminded her. Right, right. Archivist, Julia conceded, waving her glass in an arc that brought it perilously close to spilling, something she miraculously never did. Same thing, she concluded dismissively. It really isn't, Anna muttered, but deigned not to correct her again. It was a sore point for her, though, as no one seemed to take her profession seriously. Sounds like anarchist, Leanne giggled, a little tipsy herself.